Matt Mittler here with Kaufman's Holiday, Part 3, A Beacon of Light. Last time we saw Kaufman, he was strapping a Luger to his ankle. Is he gonna use it? Is this Sunday night noir? As far as I'm concerned, we should all be carrying and loaded. So, here's to episode 13. And chapter 73. If Kaufman was lucky, Councilman Phelan would be saving his golf game for the Walsh event, and might actually be getting some work done before making an appearance at the Bristol Parade. Doubtful he'd miss a chance to ogle a majorette.
"You got a lot of gumption, Mo. I should have had my secretary give you the boot."
Phelan picked up a pencil and casually began gnawing it.
"Why didn't you?"
Kaufman noticed a framed picture below a portrait of Governor McGrath. A group of young men in a pose eerily reminiscent of that shot of the Patriots in the press. There was Phelan, and Walsh, and the other players from Club Horizon. Who had they victimized? Phelan got up and cracked a window.
"You amuse me, Mo. I know what you're after here. No Clayton would like nothing better than to crush your skull in. But you did help my game, and my game is all about winning."
He leaned onto the back of his chair, gave a cocky candidate smile.
"You see, I might play on a team, but I'm really not what you'd call a team player."
Were any of them team players? Was Kaufman? He gave Phelan the unpleasant particulars about the hero, Patrick Walsh, plus a few extra added ingredients. As he left the office, he could hear him on the phone calling Victor Beckford. The ball was in motion. He stopped on the corner of Church. He could turn up Catherine Street to Eli and Judith and the kids, but better to leave that to Goldstein. As he continued along Thames, it felt like a thousand eyes were trailing him, or maybe just two, hooded under a large black hat. As he walked, he could feel the extra weight on his ankle, the comfort of steel. There was nothing more to do before the evening's festivities except spring for a new suit. After that, he went back to the Y for a legitimate snooze. He was out in a flash. Chapter 74. This time Kaufman entered the front door without incident, grimly greeted by a white-gloved black man, not Harlow. Kaufman looked up and caught Mara racing down the stairs to meet him.
"Miss the tee off?" he asked.
"Not entirely," she chirped. "But Daddy's quite teed off."
She was dressed in a slinky sequin number, had a cigarette on a 6-inch holder, gestured with it dramatically, but Kaufman noticed she didn't inhale. As he stepped inside, two elderly men were making their exit. One, with a trim pencil mustache, seemed to be in a panic. He was a step behind the other man, whose upper lip bore a walrus mustache.
I don't understand why you had to tell him in person, Victor.
It's the gentlemanly thing to do, Tom. And we are gentlemen.
But not Walsh.
Pencil Man wrung his hands. The walrus stopped for a moment and undid the buttons of his linen jacket, pulled out a gold pocket watch and checked the time.
All the more reason to cut him loose, my friend.
His eyes twinkled, but it wasn't in a saintly Santa Clausy way. The other man turned and looked back through the foyer. The rear doors were open wide, partygoers on the patio, gleaming under the late afternoon sun.
Well, if you're going to cut him loose, better cut his money loose, too.
What money?
Asked the walrus. Out on the lawn, a band began to blare a brassy sing, sing, sing.
Unfortunate drummer, Victor declared. Too bad they couldn't get Gene Krupa.
He closed the timepiece and dropped it back into his vest.
Come now, Tom. Mustn't keep the driver waiting.
Kaufman watched the men from the Hotel Viking take their leave. Neither noticed him. Why should they?
Let's go, he told Mara. I'm right behind you.
Mara twisted her toe into the flagstone. Kaufman looked at the dainty foot in the satin pump and the gray stone beneath it. He could almost picture Slim Logan on his bony knees scrubbing the splattered blood of Patrick Walsh.
After all this, now you're afraid?
He asked.
I'd rather hang back.
Half girl, half woman, and not comfortable with either. Mara pointed her cigarette to the far edge of the grounds.
Clayton's over there with what's left of his golf buddies.
Kaufman set his sights to the cliff.
Guess I'll see if I can play through then.
He placed a hand on her soft shoulder, gave a gentle squeeze.
It's almost over, kid.
As Kaufman approached, he could see Walsh smashing his driver against the stone wall. The other golfers were backing away. Mara was right to steer clear.
Care for a drink, sir?
The boy held a silver tray. A dozen glasses balanced adroitly.
Why, Gerald, and I thought I was done with surprises for the day.
Kaufman picked up a flute, breathed in the crisp, sweet smell of the champagne, set it back on the tray.
Nice suit, Mr. Kaufman, if I may say. Love the tie.
Tie was a gift, Gerald. You're looking pretty sharp yourself. Formal suits you.
All thanks to you, Mr. Kaufman. I quit the Viking. Been a caterer ever since. Pays twice as much, and I work half the time.
Sounds like a racket I should get into.
The boy swayed the tray back and forth.
Well, Gerald, I'm on the job too tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I didn't realize.
He followed Kaufman's gaze over to Walsh and his frenzied attack on the wall.
That doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't, Gerald. Why don't you head back towards the house? I'm sure you can find a parched partygoer or two.
Oh, yes, certainly.
He paused.
Think you might need me for anything, Mr. Kaufman?
If I do, I'll know where to find you. Now scram.
Gerald raced away. Didn't spill a drop. By the time Kaufman got to the property's edge, Walsh was out of breath, his club bent like a boomerang. Casey Phelan was by his side.
Sorry, Clay, he said unapologetically. It's business.
Walsh rose up, a hideous look on his face. He tossed the spent club off the cliff and whirled on Bradley Glenn, who stood apart from the other players. He charged up to the boy and smacked him, backhanded, across the cheek. Sent him flying.
Why did you tell Phelan about Pat?
Walsh shouted.
Why tell anybody? Nobody wanted to know. I didn't want to know.
Don't take it out on the boy, Clayton.
Clayton froze. Kaufman stepped forward.
He didn't tell anybody. I did.
Walsh stared at Kaufman, then Phelan, who turned his back. Glenn got up from the ground and broke away, holding his busted face. Then Walsh zeroed in on Horner, who'd been doing his best to become invisible, standing strategically behind one of the golf caddies.
Ben!
Walsh commanded, his voice frayed.
Fix this shit!
And charged off after Glenn.
If you don't mind, Ben, I'd just as soon finish the game.
The Texan, Cyrus Doyle, loped over and set his ball on a tee, tweaked it up half an inch. He was wearing red and white striped shorts and sported a blue polo shirt.
Now, why don't you make yourself useful and hand me one of them 3-irons?
Kaufman could hear the thwack of the club on the ball as he sallied back to the house. He turned and watched it rocket into the air and vanish over the side of the cliff. He waited in the study, comfortably seated in a wing-back chair, legs crossed, hat balanced deftly on his knee. Kaufman figured the beast would return to his lair. He figured right. The door imploded.
"Thought you people always had to have your heads covered," he growled.
"What people? Detectives?"
"This is my home, Kaufman, and my life, and I won't have you messing things up."
He mixed himself a drink. Downed it in one shot.
"You messed yourself up, Clayton. Only problem was you thought you could cover that mess with a magic scarf, say presto change-o, and make it all disappear. Worked well enough with Kaufman Jewelers, but it's not going to happen here."
"My boy didn't kill your parents."
"I know, but he was there. And he was in Dora Middlebow. And then he came home."
Walsh dumped himself on the Chesterfield. He seemed to sink into the upholstery like it was quicksand.
"He was soused. He fell. What the fuck do you want, Kaufman?"
Walsh gestured to Kaufman's ankle with his drink.
"Planning on using that thing?"
"That's for a different battle."
Kaufman patted the gun.
"You probably think I'm here because I've got some bird-brained idea you offed your only son, but that number's not on my playlist. I know you didn't kill Patrick. You didn't even know what he was up to at Dora Middlebow. But you did know it was something rotten, and you covered it up. Patrick's death was the best thing that could have happened to you. All I did was let Phelan know the truth about the tunnel, about the prisoner who died."
"You want to make me a pariah, Kaufman, bringing this old Jew to Newport? Staging a press conference at Turo, no less, to sing the anti-Semitism song?"
Kaufman didn't flinch.
"Why not? You've sung it long enough. Taught it to your boy. That and a whole bunch of other hateful tunes."
Walsh got up and freshened his scotch and soda, this time a bit heavier on the scotch. He snatched a couple cubes of ice, crunched them into gravel, and dropped them in the glass.
"So you want to exhume him? Rip the metal off his breast? Isn't it enough that he's dead?"
"Enough? What's enough? I don't know. Anyway, it's not about him. It's you. And you don't have to worry about gravediggers. Levitsky, your old Jew, he's also dead. There'll be no press conference, no song of any kind. I just sprinkled that on Phelan's dish for spice."
Walsh raised the drink to his brow, pressed the frosted glass against his flesh.
"You're saying there's no witness?"
"There was, and I got his story. But your pals don't know that. Probably doesn't matter now."
"Well, don't that beat all? I should have thrown you over the cliff instead of my golf club."
"What? I don't believe it."
Horner hovered in the doorway.
"Clayton, Kaufman... He's just sitting there."
He wagged a finger.
You.
Kaufman egged him on.
"What? Stunk? Shagets? Schmuck? Need help with the Yiddish all of a sudden, Horner? Losing your faith?"
"I'm calling the police."
His face blistered.
I'm.
"Just give me what you got, Ben."
Walsh leaned his bulk onto the mantelpiece. Horner squirmed, tried to avoid Kaufman's ear by sidling over beside Walsh.
Phelan and Shaughnessy are sticking with Victor on this. Same for Cyrus Doyle. None of them are, well, they're not exactly backing you up.
Then just get me my fucking money.
Steam seemed to issue off Walsh's graying mane. Horner jerked away.
The money is... I'm sorry, Clayton. I'm really sorry.
He began to quake, pressing himself into the wall. Foamy spittle collected at the corners of his mouth. Reminded Kaufman why he never much cared for dogs.
They won't... this was all top secret. It's the government. I mean, the deal was...
Walsh's voice became a low rumble.
What are you saying, you jittery little head?
You knew going into this.
Horner was near tears, his glasses fogged up.
You knew. I warned you, Clayton. I warned you it was a bad investment. No paper, no contracts. I tried to tell you, I did. The private sector investments, they don't even exist. None of it exists.
The silence was a death sentence. The glass shot across the room, smashing over Horner's head. He gave a yelp and scuttled away, ducking to avoid another attack. Walsh slid a hand across the mantel. It came to rest on a framed photograph. Picture of Patrick and Bradley, both uniformed. Patrick beefy and grinning. Bradley wan, haunted.
You know the secret to immortality, Kaufman? We're getting metaphysical now. I mean it. Eternal life. Right here on Earth. None of this heaven bullcrap. I'll bite, Clayton. Humor me.
Walsh grabbed the photo.
A son. It's all about having a son. Keeping the line going. But it doesn't have to be a bloodline.
Kaufman cleared his throat.
Bradley? Twice the man my boy would have been.
Don't seem to pain you much.
Oh, there's pain. But Patrick was an albatross. You're right. The best thing that could have happened was for him to die, and die a hero. Best for him and me.
He was getting all teary, wiped a drip of snot onto the sleeve of his suit.
And now you've gone and ruined it. You've ruined it all. I never laid a hand on Bradley before. Now he's turned against me, too. You Jews, you always gotta stick your noses into it.
Can I get you anything, sir?
Harlow's turned to survey the scene, infinitely more composed than the lawyer. He looked at Kaufman, then Clayton, then back to Kaufman.
No thank you, Harlow.
Walsh carefully replaced the portrait. Harlow examined the ice and the glass scattered across the parquet.
I'll get a dustpan, sir.
Leave it, Harlow. Let it all go to rot.
Harlow bowed his head, but held his gaze on Kaufman.
As you wish, sir,
he said softly, and with equal delicacy left the room. Kaufman waved his hat in farewell.
Good old Harlow. Good old Harlow,
echoed Walsh, returning to the bar.
Always there, ready for the refill. He's very attentive, that Harlow. That's his fucking job.
The scotch came straight, without ice. Walsh was finished with Kaufman, and, for that matter, Kaufman was finished with Walsh. So, Mara, Bradley, Walsh. None of them had really known what happened in the tunnel. Patrick never told a soul. But he must have told somebody. You gotta tell somebody.
Psst, Mr. Kaufman?
What is it, Gerald? Thought I told you to mind your own business.
Yes, but, Mr. Kaufman, I heard the lawyer telephoning the coppers.
You snooping around? You're supposed to be serving drinks.
I just wanted to help.
The kid clutched his cummerbund.
I was serving drinks, but they moved me into the house. Well, just the parlor level. Upstairs is off limits, but I...
Watch it, you'll wilt your rental.
Kaufman gave him a wink.
Thanks for the tip, sport. I owe you one.
Need me to create a diversion?
Gerald almost levitated at the prospect, but Kaufman didn't respond. His eyes grew vacant as he scanned the palatial stairway to the second floor, sweeping curve of marble polished to a luminous glow. He removed his hat, began to slowly straighten the brim. Gerald tried again.
Mr. Kaufman, do you...
I heard you, Gerald. No, that won't be necessary. But you can tell the girl...
Miss Walsh?
Right.
He replaced the hat, fitting it firm.
Tell her the concert's almost over, but there's still one number I'm hoping to hear.
In the kitchen, alone, a gilded plate set before him, sirloin tip and sautéed asparagus. Kaufman leaned into him, slid the sirloin to the side, took off his hat, and placed it in the spot where the plate had been. Harlow's expression didn't budge, though his spine did. He pressed back, tilting his chair onto its rear legs.
"What's the matter, Harlow? Don't like people getting too close?"
"Not exactly, Mr. Kaufman. It's just that you're not my kind of people."
Kaufman placed a hand on Harlow's shoulder.
"Too bad,"
he whispered, and ever so gently tipped him over. Harlow landed with a crash. After a stunned moment, he got back to his feet, righted the chair. Kaufman picked up an asparagus stalk.
"Was it as easy as that?"
"Whatever are you talking about, Mr. Kaufman?"
Harlow took out a handkerchief, began to studiously brush his elegant penguin apparel.
"Patrick."
Kaufman took a bite, chewed it tranquilly.
"Was it as easy as tipping over a chair?"
Another bite.
"Fact of the matter is, I probably would have killed him myself if I'd known what he did."
Kaufman licked his fingers, then made the same pushing gesture. Lightly against the air. Harlow returned to his seat.
"That's quite an accusation. You must have a fondness for fantasy."
"Perhaps, but upstairs is off limits, closed for parties, except to family and their trusted aides. I also got a set of eyes that pin you to the cover-up."
"I had nothing to do with canonizing Private Walsh."
Harlow pushed away Kaufman's hat and reset his meal.
"No, not that cover-up, Harlow. We know who sweetened that story."
He plucked another stalk.
"I'm talking about the other scheme, calling the boy's death an accident."
Harlow smiled, picked up his knife and fork, and sliced into the sirloin.
"So it was. Read the report."
"Except there was one omission in that report. Somebody who, I believe correctly, called the game. Your old groundskeeper, Slim Logan."
Kaufman pinched Harlow's embroidered napkin and wiped his fingers.
"He saw somebody leaving the balcony at that very moment. Doesn't give me much to run with until I factor in how you tried to stifle him. Logan, I mean. Pity he lost his job."
He tossed the cloth to Harlow.
"You'll need more than that, Mr. Kaufman."
"Figured so. That's why I was hoping for a confession."
"My, you are a dreamer."
Harlow raised a fork of blood-soaked meat to his mouth, bared his perfect white teeth, and chomped down.
Mo Cake Man!
Trask and Hattery stood gloating in the kitchen door. The little one leapt in, smacked Kaufman on the back.
Figured we'd find you here, hanging with the coloreds.
Kaufman kept his focus on Harlow as he continued to consume his meal.
Laurel and Hardy, thought you boys were on Mara's meter.
Not tonight we ain't,
bellowed Hattery, his bulk blocking the doorway.
We's more like independent contractors, sneered Trask. Please tell me I ain't coming quiet-like, cause I really need the exercise.
He grabbed Kaufman in a chokehold.
It's your bloated buddy what needs the exercise,
Kaufman gasped. Hattery seized him by the arms. Together, they hoisted him from his seat and began to drag him from the kitchen.
Mr. Kaufman.
They stopped.
Don't forget your hat.
Harlow held up Kaufman's felt fedora. Hattery scrunched it in his fist and smashed it onto Kaufman's head. They waited till they got outside to inflict pain. The first strike came from Trask, a couple inches below the belt. The second from Hattery, more appropriately on target. Kaufman collapsed on the front steps. While the Joy Boys yucked it up, he took advantage of the opportunity to yank the gun from his ankle, stuffed it under a forsythia without either clown taking notice.
You know, Hattery, it gives me such pleasure to see the Jew in his natural state. On all fours.
Trask lifted up on his toes, hooked his thumbs in his waistband, and giggled like a little girl. Hattery grabbed hold of Kaufman's ear, gave it a tug.
Almost makes you want to put him on a leash. Take him home.
Too bad my landlady don't allow pets.
They both burst into hysterics. The clowns waved goodbye, middle fingers artfully extended. Kaufman calmly watched as their image receded. Even with the bumps and bruises, another abused suit, and a pocketful of cash purloined, he was pretty much at peace. So what if he didn't have a sworn statement from Harlow? Mara didn't care about the murder anyway. Just wanted to see Clayton, signaling as the ship sank. Well, she got what she wanted. Maybe she'd also get some peace. Maybe not. It wasn't his business either way, and his business was all but completed. He considered taking a break, collecting his final dues, and sojourning to Chicago. They had a hep jazz scene there, and he always liked jazz. As the ferry rumbled away, he could catch the fireworks shooting up over Cliff Walk. A veritable display of patriotism. Almost made you want to break into a tap dance and belt out Yankee Doodle Dandy. But then he saw something else. Over on the dock, a gloomy figure. It lifted its hat. A gesture of bon voyage, or something less favorable. When the hat returned to the head ducked down, and the unmistakable spark of a lighter flared up under the wide black brim. Chapter 75. It took Kaufman 2.5 hours to get back from Providence. When the ferry finally docked, he couldn't find a taxi, so he walked. So fast, his knees started acting up again. He was about a block away from the Y on Washington Street when he saw the plume of smoke rising above the street lamps. He didn't slow up, just kept walking, down to the waterfront, and straight into the Slipknot. He came to 3 days later. Chapter 76.
Get your fucking hands off of me!
The attendants were white, but Kaufman saw black hats on each of their heads. They were speaking a language he'd never heard, poking him, prodding. He was in agony, his body busted open on the inside. He screamed again, but this time words didn't form. His tongue swelled and filled his throat, and he threw up. They left him alone. He had to get out, but couldn't move. A lead blanket lay over him. Steel rails penned him from the sides. His eyes stung, and vision funneled to a blur. Other victims formed a ghostly row the length of the room. Shadowy beasts hovered over some of them, wielding blades, stabbing suddenly, and flying away. The victims cried out. Kaufman cried along with them. "Do you know where you are?" It was one of the white shrouded creatures. It looked down at him, a flat, fatigued face, but not entirely malicious. "You're in Newport Hospital," it offered patiently.
"He's dead."
The words came from some subterranean cavern. They weren't his. "You're not dead. You've been very sick. Don't worry. We'll take good care of you." A hand rested a wet rag on his brow.
"He's dead,"
he tried again.
"Burnt."
This time the lips moved, but nothing came out. "Just get some rest." The creature began to fade. "You'll feel better after you get some rest." Next time he saw the face, it was Goldstein's. Kaufman's back arched, and his body flapped against the mattress like some perishing fish on the shore. His eyes flicked open and closed, and it wasn't Goldstein any longer. Now it was Therese, as ravishing as ever. She leaned in close to him and spoke, but not in soft and sensuous Portuguese. This was English. It was nasal and gruff.
"Heck of a time fighting you."
And it was Goldstein again.
"What is this? I turn my back for one moment and you go mashuga?"
He shook Kaufman by the shoulder. It was definitely Goldstein. Kaufman bolted upright, shoved him away, and began to scream. The nurse was there in a flash. She took a dagger and viciously plunged it into his thigh.
Thank you.
They don't call it delirium for nothing.
I ain't never seen him like this.
Must have been on a bender for days. That and no food and being dry for how long? Still, he's lucky. I seen worse. Been there myself.
They were talking about him. Just sitting there by the bed, talking about him. Emmanuel Goldstein and James Fry. Surely Kaufman was in hell.
Hey, he's coming too.
Mo, you in there? It's me, Goldie.
Kaufman's voice cracked.
No. No, you're a corpse.
The two ghouls looked at each other, then at him. The one who resembled Goldstein spoke.
Shit, Mo, is that it? You thought I was in that blaze?
Kaufman just stared. The other one mumbled into his shirt collar.
That's why you went off. Thought you was toasted.
Mo, I didn't go to the Y that night. I ended up back at Charlene's. Didn't even know about the fire till the next day. The fire, no one was hurt, they said, because that was my first thought when I went to check in on you. Then I got hold of Mara, who told me you was back in Providence. But I couldn't find you there. I was going crazy. Thought you was hurt or something.
It really was, Goldstein.
You dope.
Kaufman lifted a wilted hand to swat his partner's arm.
That librarian's got you by the balls.
Yeah, well...
Goldstein sniffled into his hanky. It's as good a place as any to be got by. He opened a fresh pack of picks, offered one to Kaufman, who declined.
Guess we gave each other a grade A scare there. Can't believe you hit the sauce over me, brother. I ain't worth it. Lucky thing Fry here brought you in. Want a toothpick, Navy boy?
Fry popped a pick between his tainted teeth. He was still a big buzz-headed oaf, but seemingly sober.
You got me here, Jimmy?
Kaufman asked.
If I's gonna trawl for drunks, what better spot than the Slipknot?
Surprised you didn't dump me in the harbor.
Could have done that. Not in a program. Besides, I still need back my K-bar.
You're looking pretty clean. What you need the knife for?
It's sentimental.
Well,
Kaufman offered,
my brother's got it, but I'll get it back for you.
Fry massaged his lumpen face.
Your brother? I also owes him an apology. But that step's a ways away. I ain't even finished on number two yet.
Kaufman didn't understand a word. Maybe he was still delirious. Didn't matter. Goldstein was alive. They were both alive.
That'll teach me a lesson. I gave up. Didn't seem there was any other choice.
There ain't no choice. That's the first step. Just admitting that much.
Fry spit out his toothpick, tried bending it into a ring. Goldstein interjected.
He's talking about this group, Mo.
Fry shifted in his seat. He seemed almost as uncomfortable as Kaufman.
My ma sent some guy to meet me down on the docks. Took me to a meeting with a bunch of other guys up in Providence.
That sobered you up?
Kaufman asked.
How?
Just meeting. Talking. One day at a time, they say. Been 23 days so far.
That's it? A group of guys?
All kind of guys. And one lady. Kind of like being on a football team, except there ain't no coach. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous.
AA, yeah. I heard of them. Well, good for you, Jimmy. You're a walking miracle. I'd like to bring you to a meeting when they let you out of here. They're letting me out now, my friend.
Kaufman sat up.
And I got a few things to settle before I can join your soiree, swell as it sounds.
Figured.
Fry folded a piece of paper in two and placed it on the nightstand.
There's the address and meeting times.
He stood, looked ruefully at Kaufman.
We're all basically the same. All of us.
Us who?
Asked Kaufman.
Alcoholics,
answered Fry. He stuck his hands in his pockets and trudged out of the room.
He was just trying to help, Mo. Couldn't hurt to go to one of the meetings.
Later.
Kaufman swung his legs over the bed rail.
Whoa there, boy.
Goldstein placed a palm on Kaufman's sweat-soaked chest.
They gotta watch your ass here at least another day.
Don't got another day, Goldie. I'm missing half a week already.
You almost missed your life. If Fry hadn't brought you in...
And I thank him for that. But I know who killed Patty Walsh, Goldie. And there's still that godforsaken goon in the trench coat. The one who would have killed you if you'd gone back to the Y.
It can wait, champ. It all can wait.
Mr. Kaufman, I see you're feeling better. It was the creature in white again. Kaufman pushed Goldstein away and got to his feet.
Time to get out of here, nurse.
And Kaufman's legs buckled under him, and he promptly collapsed to the floor. Whatever plans Kaufman had in his mind, his body had another agenda. They stuck more needles in him and forced broth down his throat, and by the end of the day, he was half-human. He'd propped himself up and was thumbing through last month's Life magazine. Full-page photo of Mrs. Adolf Hitler. Not quite the kind of babe you'd find on the cover of Look. He heard a squeak and glanced up to catch Maura Walsh tippy-toeing towards his crib.
"Got the word from Goldie?"
he asked.
"You had me on the edge, mister. Getting that boy to tell me it's almost over, and then dropping out of sight?"
"I like to build suspense."
She sat on the side of the bed. The bars had been mercifully lowered.
"How you feeling, Mo?"
She tugged on his foot, peeking beneath the sheet.
"Better now. This morning was a Fleischer cartoon. You would have been Betty Boop."
"I like Betty Boop."
"So do I."
She was a cool ocean breeze, a saxophone solo at midnight. He'd never thought of Maura as healing, but she was.
"Thanks,"
he said.
"For what?"
she asked, amused.
"I'll think of something."
She punched his thigh under the cover.
"You hophead. I'm the one who's supposed to be thanking you."
"Job's not done, kiddo."
"Finish it, then."
She fished a fat envelope out of a polka-dotted purse, crossed her legs, back in bobby socks, he noted.
"Final payment. Now give me the news."
"No proof."
"Proof? Did you need proof to tumble Clayton?"
"It was the threat of proof. I had the facts. Besides, if Daddy-O's down, isn't that enough?"
She ran the corner of the envelope across her bottom lip.
"Strangely, it isn't."
"Not so strange."
He eyed her more carefully. Maybe he didn't know a thing. Sometimes you put two and two together, it comes out five. He scratched his itchy scalp.
"They said they could let me go tomorrow morning. Think you could send a car?"
"You rat! You're not going to tell me."
"Can't, but when I do, I want the troops assembled, the whole mishbucha."
"I'll get you myself."
"Nah, you hold down the fort. Send your man Friday."
"You mean Harlow?"
"Yeah, send him."
Now she was the one with the suspicious glint. She floated the envelope in the air.
"Then this will just have to wait."
Kaufman reclined, his head sinking into the pillow.
"It all can wait,"
he murmured, and waved her off. Nothing like mandatory R&R, but a hospital bed is about the only kind of rest you'll get on Sunday night noir. Episode 13, Chapters 73-76. Kaufman's Holiday, Part 3. A Beacon of Light. Radio Free Brooklyn hosts this program, and a bunch more. So what about helping them out? Go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. You'll even get some perks. And you can also sponsor a program like mine, Kaufman's Holiday. Would help keep me out of the loony ward. Special thanks to Chris Durian for our theme song, Case Closed, featuring Brian Schwartz on trumpet and Sang-hee Cho on piano. And to Arthur Rosen for his piano solos that float in and out. We've got some time to fill here, so I'll be playing all of Arthur's improvisations at the end. I do hate saying goodbye, but what you gonna do? This is Matt Mittler signing off. But I'll be back. You'll hear me coming. My floor chimes clacking on the cobblestones.